all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We also want to thank Eisenhower Center. It's a brain injury recovery center. Learn more about EisenhowerCenter.com. They're located in Michigan and in Florida. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at LegalHelpForVeterans.com. Contact us if you'd like to be a sponsor on Veterans Radio, and let's move on to our program. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Paul J. Ryan. Paul Ryan is a retired Navy Reserve captain. He's a resident of West Michigan over in Johnson, Michigan. Started life in Brooklyn, New York. Graduated with honors from the University of Notre Dame, commissioned as an ensign, and made his way all the way up captain. So, Paul, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, Jim. Good to be with you.
Well, you served about 25-plus years in the Navy and Navy Reserve with all kinds of different assignments in peacetime, and you were a surface warfare officer. How did a nice boy from Brooklyn, New York, end up in the Navy?
Well, interesting question there. I actually attended a military high school in Manhattan. Pretty unusual school at that time in that it was a day school, not a boarding school like a lot of military schools are. It was also parochial. It was Catholic. And the military program at that time was mandatory through the Junior Army ROTC program. Fell in love with that and was looking, when I was getting ready to graduate, looking at colleges, and I couldn't afford to go without a scholarship, so I was looking at Army and Navy ROTC scholarships and decided I didn't want to get that dirty by being in a foxhole, so I applied for a Navy scholarship and was fortunate enough to get it. Graduated from Notre Dame's Navy ROTC program with my bachelor's degree 2 weeks after the Vietnam War ended. The war ended April 30th, 1975, when the Viet Cong captured Saigon, and I was commissioned on May 17th. So I just missed the Vietnam War by 2 weeks.
Some guys just have all the luck. But you had obviously a very interesting career and one that you enjoyed because you stayed, for the whole retirement period.
Yes. I was on active duty for 5 years, all of that in San Diego, made one peacetime deployment to the Western Pacific on a destroyer, was the oldest destroyer on active duty with the Navy at that time, was built in 1946. Was in what's called the individual ready reserve after that for about 18 months before I started active drilling, and stayed with that until 2005, when it was basically mandatory retirement. That's a federal law that governs reserve officers in all the branches. You'd have to be at least selected for the next promotion up, which for me would be rear admiral or one-star admiral. And if you aren't selected for that, then you have to retire at 30 years of commissioned service, which is what I did in 2005.
You had a very interesting civilian career in banking as well. You were involved with Fifth Third Bank in Grand Rapids, which if you're old enough like me, you notice the predecessor was Old Kent Bank, which had a great reputation. So you had a very fulfilling civil career as well.
Yeah, I was 37 years in banking when you stitch together my time with Fifth Third and time with Old Kent, and most of that, just about all of it, was in the trusts and estates and investment planning area. A very interesting career, met a lot of interesting people, employees, vendors, as well as clients, and really a lot of interesting situations and some interesting business travel as well.
So you stayed involved in your civilian career with military matters as well and veteran matters. You participated in the Michigan Committee for Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, or ESGR. You were active with the Military Officers Association of America, the United Veterans Council of Kent County, and the West Michigan Veterans Coalition. And all of that's to say you are currently a board member on the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor. And that's kind of why we have you on today, because we want to talk about an upcoming induction ceremony that the Hall of Honor is having for Michigan military and veterans for the class of 2020, which got diverted because of COVID. But that Hall of Honor is coming up. When and where will that induction ceremony be?
Yeah, the Hall of Honor does conduct an annual induction ceremony to recognize Michigan's most distinguished service members and veterans. We had our initial induction ceremony in 2019. COVID, of course, last year had to put the kibosh on that. But this year, in 2021, we are combining the induction class of 2020 and 2021 in our ceremony on Friday, November 19th at the Michigan History Museum in Lansing.
Well, it's going to be great to be able to get all of these veterans and military members or their family members together in person for an event on November 19th of 2021, beginning about 12:30 p.m. at the Michigan History Museum in Lansing. Talk to us a little bit, before we start talking specifically about the class of 2020, Paul, talk to us a little bit about what the mission or goal of the Hall of Honor is.
Yeah, the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor is a relatively new nonprofit entity created in 2017, and it's designed to have a place, a forum, for recognizing Michigan citizens who have distinguished themselves either through exceptional service while in the military, or exceptional public service after they've taken off the uniform. Our very first induction ceremony, as I said, was 2019. Beginning from a standing start, we filled that auditorium with over 240 people. Our mission is threefold. First is to recognize those individuals who the Hall of Honor believes are deserving of that recognition. And I'll tell you, Jim, that in my short time, just a couple of years with the Hall of Honor board, I have been really overwhelmed with the knowledge of some of the extraordinary people, Michiganders, who have served in uniform, and had some extraordinary careers in uniform, and some individuals who have provided some really outstanding, extraordinary contributions to our society in a variety of ways. In recognizing these individuals, we hope to educate Michigan citizens, particularly young people, about military service as well as civic service, in order to instill an understanding of an appreciation for patriotism and civic virtue. As I said earlier, we're a new organization, so those two goals we think we are pretty good at executing at present. At some point in the future, as our organization matures, we hope to promote through scholarships, possibly nonprofit grants and other means, to promote the research and teaching of Michigan's military heritage, and more importantly, the importance of military service to citizenship and our responsibilities as citizens throughout the state and throughout the country. I'm particularly concerned about that last piece, since we know that those currently serving in uniform, the active component, the reserve component, and the National Guard amounts to less than 1% of the total population. And if you look at anyone with military service going all the way back to World War II, that figure represents only about 7% of the population. So, you know, 90+% of the people in the population of the United States don't have direct military experience. And so an organization like the Hall of Honor is, I think, pretty important to educate people about what that looks like.
Well, and what's really interesting, and we're going to turn to the class of 2020 inductees here momentarily, but what's really interesting when you look at the inductees and you hear their individual stories, that's where history is really written, and that's where history can be taught to the general population, to our kids, to realize what some of these folks have done and sacrificed, both in service and then kind of what's unique about the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor is it also recognizes those folks who, after getting out of service, continue to, if you will, serve the country in their private sector jobs in a big way, and we'll talk about some of those. And we're talking to Paul Ryan, retired Captain Navy Reserve, who's on the board of the Hall of Honor. Paul, do you want to start by just sort of naming all of the inductees in the class of 2020 that are going to be put in to the hall come this November for the, if you will, for the first time for them on November 19th, 2021?
Yeah, happy to do that, Jim. There are six inductees that we are bringing into the Hall of Honor in what we call the military category. That would be inductees who would be recognized for their military careers and military service. And then six inductees that we are categorizing as veteran category inductees, those folks who have had very significant, extraordinary contributions to our society after they've taken off the uniform. The first of the six military category inductees is Maurice Kurtz. Maurice rose to the rank of four-star admiral in the Navy. He was a veteran of both World War I and World War II, was a combat leader, particularly in World War II.
And each of these folks have their own story, and we're not going to have the time to go through all of them, but we're going to direct people to the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor website, which is MIMilitaryVet, HallOfHonor.org, where you're going to be able to read the full story. But let's go on, Paul. Richard Gallagher, I think, is next up. Another Navy man that you want to promote.
Richard Gallagher is a three-star admiral in the Navy. Morton Harris was a major in the U.S. Army Air Corps. Alida Lutz served in the U.S. Army Air Corps. Lucius Theus, who was a general officer in the U.S. Air Force, and Donald Thompson, Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Air Force. Those are the six military category inductees for the class of 2020. And then in the veteran category, we're bringing in Rosemarie Aquilina, was a major in the Army National Guard, Gerald Ford, President of the United States, William Milliken, was an Army veteran, governor of Michigan, Gary Peters, Navy veteran, U.S. Senator, Peter Secchia, Marine Corps veteran, and Linda Woods, an Air Force veteran.
Well, I could just tell by the branch of service and the names of the individuals that there's a good mix of officers enlisted, every branch of the service. It sounds like the Hall of Honor is trying to make sure that it's representing all kinds of different Michigan veterans and military members. Do I have that right?
Exactly right, Jim. What counts for us is the achievement. And when we look at extraordinary achievement, that can occur anywhere. Service as an officer, service as an enlisted person, experience in combat, non-combat experience, as well as just a wide variety of service to the community as a civilian after military service in the fields of academia, business leadership, philanthropy, education, you name it. It runs the gamut. And I've been looking at the inductees. I'm just thrilled at the diversity of achievement, you know, who these people are and what they've done.
Well, there's a couple of these inductees in the class of 2020 I want to ask you to drill down a little bit more on, because I found them kind of interesting. And tell us about the story about Althea Lutz, who was a Army Nurse Corps veteran, but a heck of a story.
Yeah, Althea Lutz is the perfect example of wartime bravery. She was from Freeland, Michigan, born in 1915. She volunteered for the U.S. Army Nurse Corps pretty shortly after World War II, the beginning of World War II in February 1942, commissioned a second lieutenant, was trained as an air evacuation nurse, something that was really new for the military, new and untested at that time. Was assigned to a medical unit, the 802nd Medical Air Evacuation Squadron, which was part of the U.S. Army Air Corps' 12th Air Force. Her unit was deployed to North Africa, and was the first one to do a wartime deployment overseas. Alita participated in six battle campaigns over a 20-month period. She accompanied air combat missions and conducted all-weather medical evacuations in France, Italy, and Tunisia. Tragically, Alita died at age of 28 when her aircraft crashed in France in November of 1944. Her medevac flight crashed, no survivors. On that plane were 15 wounded soldiers, nine of whom were American and six were German POWs. Alita was the first American woman to die during World War II. She was the most experienced flight nurse in the U.S. military service, with 196 separate sorties, separate flights, 814 flight nurse combat hours, and the most patients transferred, 3,500 patients, Jim, with none lost under her care.
Oh, my. I mean, you hear that story of this woman from Michigan, and it ought to be a movie. I mean, I don't know if people realize the bravery, the sacrifice. And at that time, air evacuation was unheard of. This was a whole new area of medicine of how do you do this. And this woman became the most successful, most experienced flight nurse. But in the end, it's a risky business, and she dies in a plane crash. Great person to have inducted into the Hall of Honor, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, the risk of simply going up, Jim, in a flight at that very early stage in this type of military activity, a big risk, and tragically, she paid the price for that when her plane crashed. But you're right, just an outstanding story. And I'm very grateful to my fellow Hall of Honor board members for uncovering this story, promulgating it, and making a decision to induct her.
Well, it just shows the quality of people going into the Hall of Honor. And I want you to drill down a little bit more on another such person. Major General Lucius Theus is... when you hear these guys' titles, you think, well, you know, they don't get born a general. They don't get born a flight nurse. They go through a lot to get to where they're at. Tell us a little bit about his story.
Yeah, Lucius Theus, great story here too, Jim. He was born in 1922 in Tennessee, actually, but lived most of his life in Michigan. He got a bachelor's degree from the University of Maryland and a master's degree from George Washington University. He enlisted in the U.S. Army Air Corps, just like Alita did, in 1942 as a private, buck private, and went all the way up eventually to two-star general. Right after the war, he was admitted to officer candidate school in the Army, graduated second in his officer class, and was commissioned as a second lieutenant. Lucius Theus had a 37-year career in what became the United States Air Force in 1948. Many different assignments, both stateside and overseas, one of which was the director of the Air Force Accounting and Finance Center in Denver. Graduated from distinction, with distinction from the Air War College at Maxwell Air Force Base. He was base commander at Cameron Bay Air Base in Vietnam. Lucius developed the direct deposit system for military payrolls. When I was on active duty in 1975, 1980, I would get this paper check and had to go to the bank and deposit it. Well, General Theus changed that for the entire military. He also led a Department of Defense task force in studying race relations within the military. And under his leadership, a lot of significant education programs and policies were developed to counter issues in race relations and improve them within the military. General Theus retired from the Air Force in 1979. Many high decorations for someone who was not really in combat. He played a support role in the Tuskegee Airmen and basically played support roles throughout his career. He was the first African-American combat support officer to be promoted to the rank of general, one-star general, in any branch of the military. General Theus died in 2007 at the age of 85 and is buried in Arlington National Cemetery.
Again, one of these stories of a man who just, born in humble beginnings in Tennessee, who goes on through education and hard work, just has an amazing career. A bright, bright guy, because you can tell that from all of the assignments that he had and what he accomplished. But just a wonderful quality human being to be inducted into the Hall of Honor. So again, I commend the board for its activity there. Let's go on to somebody who didn't obtain the rank of general, somebody who was a Marine sergeant during his time, Peter Secchia.
Peter Secchia is a 2020 inductee in the veteran category. He's a well-known business leader and philanthropist here in the western part of the state, from Grand Rapids originally. Lived in Grand Rapids for many years, actually born in New Jersey in 1937, served as a sergeant in the Marine Corps in the late 50s. He did obtain his bachelor's degree in economics from Michigan State in 1963, was very active in Michigan's Republican politics. He was a Republican National Committeeman in 1980, 84, and 88. He was vice chair of the RNC's Midwest region for a number of years. He was an advisor to the 1988 election campaign committee for George H.W. Bush, was appointed as the United States ambassador to Italy and the Principality of San Marino by President Bush, and served in that role from 1989 to 1993. Peter was chief executive officer for Universal Forest Products, a very prominent company in Michigan, served in many nonprofit voluntary capacities as well, on the board of John Cabot University in Rome. Governor Engler appointed him as chair of SECIA Commission 1, which focused on improving government services. Governor Engler also appointed Peter to SECIA Commission 2, which focused on public sector pensions. But he was also known for just outstanding philanthropy. Peter donated $1 million in 2010 to MSU for construction of the women's softball field named SECIA Stadium, a building on the Michigan State College of Human Medicine campus in Grand Rapids was named after him, and many, many public awards, really too numerous to mention, Jim. I actually met Peter a couple of times. One time was at a Economic Club of Grand Rapids lunch that was arranged to commemorate 9/11 a few years back. And I attended that and brought a couple of military folks with me, one of whom was a Marine officer. And around the table are all these various high-powered people, and Peter's sitting there. He did not take any interest in any of those people, but he talked that Marine's ear off. once a Marine, always a Marine, and Mr. Secchia really showed that.
Well, I think it's important that we recognize folks not only for their military service, but the way in which they continue their public service afterwards, and it certainly sounds like Peter Secchia did that in bushel basketfuls. But this board has, you know, in the 2020 class, you've got President Ford, you've got Governor Milliken, you have Senator Peters, really men who cross all political lines, Democrats, Independents, Republicans. And it really isn't about their, you know, what initial they put after their name, is it, Paul? It's about the service.
Exactly right, Jim. What we're looking for as a board for these inductees and potential inductees for the future is achievement, thought leadership, initiative, overcoming barriers. Breaking through, being the first of something. And I think in 2021 we have a candidate or two that fits certainly those descriptions.
Well, let's remind our Veteran Radio listeners that we're talking to Paul J. Ryan, Navy Captain Reserve retired, board member of the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, and that the induction ceremony is coming up November 19th. At the Michigan History Museum in Lansing, and folks can go to the website to find out more information, and can they attend the ceremony?
Right, open to the public, free and open to the public, so come on and join us if you find yourself in Lansing on November 19th.
So the induction ceremony should be very interesting on November 19th. And next month, we'll tell you about the 2021 inductees to the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor. Let's hear some more from a couple of sponsors before we go on to the next half of our program.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Private Dale Hansen killed 12 Japanese soldiers in a one-man attack on their positions. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Hansen unhesitatingly took the initiative during a critical stage of the action and, armed with a rocket launcher, crawled to an exposed position where he attacked and destroyed a strategically located hostile pillbox. With his weapon subsequently destroyed by enemy fire, he seized a rifle and continued his one-man assault. Reaching the crest of a ridge, he opened fire on 6 Japanese and killed 4 before his rifle jammed. Attacked by the 2 remaining Japanese, he beat them off with the butt of his rifle and then climbed back to cover. Returning with another weapon and supply of grenades, he fearlessly advanced and destroyed a strong mortar position and annihilated 8 more of the enemy.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net. VeteransCrisisLine.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
We're going to hear now from a couple of leaders of the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance. There's some important issues to talk to them about, and it is Hispanic Heritage Month, so the timing on this interview turned out pretty well. So sit back and enjoy. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today two special guests, Brigadier General Carlos Charlie Martinez and Brigadier General Joseph Medina, both retired. Charlie was in the United States Air Force, and Joseph was with the United States Marine Corps. Gentlemen, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Great to be here. Great to be here.
Well, we have both of these gentlemen on because they are on the board of the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But let me give you a little background on each of these gentlemen. Brigadier General Joseph Medina, United States Marine Corps, graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy and later went on to earn his Master's of Science degree in Systems Management from the University of Southern California. Had a number of assignments and teaching positions even, you know, with these generals. You always get these smart cookies. And one of his, assignments of note was the ground-up development of a new organization, the Expeditionary Strike Group 3, and he led the strike group during a combat operation or deployment in Operation Iraqi Freedom. He's been retired now for a number of years. His service period, I think, was 1976 to 2007, and he's very active in the civilian world in a number of major corporations and very interesting things that we probably won't have time to talk about. But I assure you, Brigadier General Medina's got quite the hell of a resume. And Brigadier General Carlos, or Charlie Martinez, is no slouch either. He was born in Havana, Cuba, grew up in Miami, Florida, graduated from the University of Miami with his BS in Systems Analysis, entered the Air Force to become a pilot, got assigned off to various flight training duties and other things. Along the way, picked up an MS in Operations Research from the George Washington University, and has a number of tours as a management engineer and as a missile test engineer. Ultimately, moved over to the Air Force Reserve. He had a variety of operations research and acquisitions positions through that his career as a reservist. He rose to the rank of Brigadier General, went back on some active duty time after 9/11, and his period of service is 1972 to 2006. Gentlemen, both of you, I could spend 20 minutes on, but I'm not going to be able to do that today because we're trying to cover some other issues. But I'm always curious. I guess I got to ask this question first, and I'll go to Charlie, if I can go to you first.
Sure.
It's always curious, and I think it's good to pass along to people, why did a nice boy like you from Miami go into the military?
Well, it's a real ever since I was a child, I was always fascinated with the military, and particularly with airplanes. And I had no intention of going into the military until I was 1971. I was graduating. I got one of those low draft numbers, which meant that the Army was going to join me. So I thought, well, I'm not going to let the Army join me, so I'm going to join the Air Force instead and pursue that childhood ambition of becoming a pilot. So that's what I did. Well, and I've never looked back and thought it was a bad decision. It was one of the best moves I ever made in my life.
Well, and we should say you met that boyhood dream of becoming a pilot, and they are a licensed and active instructor pilot as well.
That too, yes.
Joseph, let me turn to you. How did a nice boy like you end up at the Naval Academy?
Well, I come from a career military family. My father enlisted in the U.S. Army when he was 15 and a half, and that was at the end of World War II. He told me later, because he tried to come in the Marine Corps first, and they said he didn't weigh enough, so he joined the Army. He did 21 years in before he retired, based out of Fort Hood. And interestingly, I have a son that's also a Naval Academy graduate, and he's flying the V-22 in Okinawa. So between the three of us, we already have over 60 years of military service. So that's how I got started.
Well, those are a lot of the times we see that this gets passed on. It's a family affair. Everybody recognizes the need to serve in some capacity. You don't have to make a career out of it, but that's great. That's 60 years of service is incredible. So both of you gentlemen retired from the military, and some number of years later got involved in the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance. Charlie, why don't you tell us how and why you got involved?
Sure. Well, when I towards the end of my military career, there were several of us Hispanics that had and other minorities that had risen to the rank of general. So we thought, hey, you know, we finally arrived. You know, that the Air Force has finally recognized that minorities are important. And we're rising to the ranks. And then I retired, and then through contacts with some of my former officers, and particularly Eddie Cabrera, who's the founder of the HVLA, I sort of became aware of the fact that maybe I was the last class to rise to the rank of general, and things had gone downhill since then. So Eddie had put together a bunch of data that he'd identified, and I looked at it and I said, oh, yeah, this is a serious problem that we're facing now, and we have to do something about it. So I joined the HVLA probably about 3 years ago, before the IRDR, the racial diversity review that came out in December 2020. So and been most active with them since.
Let's give Eddie Cabrera some additional props here. I don't have his full resume, but I do have in front of me that he's a 1982 graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, where he earned his BS in astronautical engineering. He holds an MS and an MA. Again, another one of these really smart guys. I don't have the year that he retired, and I think his retirement rank was at a colonel level.
That's correct. He was a colonel.
So, kudos to him for seeing a need for the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance and reaching out to gentlemen like you guys. Joseph, how did a nice retired brigadier general busy in the private sector find himself pulled into the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance?
Yeah, when I was on active duty, I was involved in recruiting Hispanic youth, both officer and enlisted, into the Marine Corps. And after I retired, we had made some progress with the number of Hispanics that had been recruited. And then after a few years, I looked back and saw all the colonels and generals seemed to be Hispanic colonels and generals in the Marine Corps were leaving the service. So I said, hey, that's something we need to pay more attention to. And I joined HVLA about a year ago, but became a board member only about 4 months ago. A friend of mine is also on the board, Rico Aponte, and he had shared with me some of the work they were doing. So I was when he offered me to join, I had my hand in the air and said, yeah, it's something I'd like to do, see if we can improve the leadership. You know, in the Marine Corps, there's certainly a lot of enlisted Hispanics, but we don't have the numbers in the officer corps that we need to, especially the senior officers.
Well, see, they didn't teach you guys anything in Marines. You never volunteer. Come on. The Army guys would have known that. No, I'm kidding. The HVLA's mission, which is set out as, and I should say that Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and its mission is to advance the inclusion of Latinos across all leadership levels in the United States Armed Forces, military and civilian positions. So it's a solid mission that I don't think anybody can really disagree with, and its board is a bunch of really impressive guys like yourself. As HVLA has looked at this issue, I guess let me turn to something that is currently put out and commenting on, and maybe it creates a new opportunity to have people look at Hispanics' service in the military a little differently. And that is, as the DOD kind of tries to figure out what do we do with these Confederate name bases, and we go through base renaming, there's been some suggestion by the Alliance that you should look at Hispanic military men and rename accordingly. Joseph, can you talk to us a little bit about the thinking here?
Certainly. Part of the mission and vision of HVLA is not just to increase the number, is that our the makeup, particularly the senior level, should reflect society as a whole. And society as a whole, you know, has 18% increasing to 20% Hispanics. So we should have that in the senior ranks. For the bases, one of the other things I did prior to retirement is I was a commander of the Marine Corps installations in the Pacific. So the Marine Corps did not have a bunch of bases named after Confederate officers or Confederate folks. And so, you know, the Army does, and in particular. So we felt that, you know, these should be representative of our society. You know, we do have, and particularly here, and I live in Houston, and not far from here, and as I mentioned, where my father retired from was Fort Hood, named after a former Confederate general from Texas. And we have, you know, several very stellar Hispanic soldiers, two in particular that were both from Texas. And that was, one was Master Sergeant Roy Benavides, and the other one was General Cavazos. And they, you know, were originally both from Texas, and they're both buried at the cemetery, the National Cemetery, Veteran Cemetery at Fort Sam Houston. So, you know, we felt that it was fitting, particularly with some of the issues that Fort Hood had last year. And they both had experience at Fort Bragg as well. So that's why HVLA says, you know, these would be stellar candidates. You know, General Cavazos not only was the first general officer in the Army, Hispanic. He was the first four-star general officer, and he has two separate Distinguished Service Crosses. That's the next level down from a Medal of Honor, one in the Korean War and one in Vietnam. Really a distinguished man, a great soldier, and Roy Benavides, Medal of Honor winner. And if you understand some of his history, he went to Vietnam the first time in, I believe it was 1965, got injured, came back, was recuperating in the hospital for over a year, was told that he was not going to be able to walk again. He forced himself up to walk, and within a year, he was released from the hospital. And a year later, or 2 years later, in 1968, he found himself was able to convince the Army to let him go back to Special Forces and went back to Vietnam, where he earned his Medal of Honor. They thought he was dead then at that time. They actually had loaded him in a body bag and was shipping him back when he started to fight with the doctor. That they said, I guess this guy's not dead. So he came back, later awarded the Medal of Honor. So these two soldiers are tremendous, tremendous records. So we thought they should be fitting and should be considered to be named. Having been a base commander, I know the name of a base carries importance to the service members that are serving there. So, you know, that's why we felt that, you know, personally, I felt it was wrong having the bases named after Confederate soldiers. But, you know, no matter which way you are on that issue, it's already been decided that they're going to be renamed. So we thought these two soldiers in particular should be considered for the naming of these bases.
Yeah, I don't know how you could find two better men to honor with naming bases. Roy Benavides is a Medal of Honor recipient. That right there tells you that his story is above most, in both in valor and heroism. I'm not familiar, and I am familiar with Benavides' story. I'm not familiar with General Cavazos' story. And as the first Hispanic four-star general, we all should be sort of alerted to that. That's, again, one of those prestigious. You don't get four stars for nothing, and his two Distinguished Service Crosses are a testament to his valor as well. So those are both great names. Let me ask a question.
He came from a relatively poor family, and he managed to get into Texas Tech, and he had as an ROTC was a distinguished graduate from ROTC there. And both him and his brother also rose to be the U.S. Secretary of Education. So they both pulled themselves up and did quite well. So.
Is there, let me ask this, I should know this, and you know, but I guess there's hundreds of bases in Army, Air Force, etc. Are there bases named after Hispanic military men?
Not that I know of.
Well, that sort of answers it right there.
Yeah, there's not major bases. There is I know there's a training camp in Korea, I think it's called the Rodriguez Camp. There's no major bases that I am aware of that are named for Hispanics.
Well, that leans heavily in favor here of what HVLA is promoting. But there's one more name for Naval Station Rota in Spain that it's promoting. Tell us a little bit about that, if you will, General Medina.
Yeah, that would be Admiral Horacio Rivero. He is actually from Puerto Rico, and he went to the U.S. Naval Academy from Puerto Rico and graduated prior to World War II. So he served in World War II. In fact, he received a Bronze Star with a Combat V while in World War II. on one of the ships, and that was during the Guadalcanal campaign. But he rose to become an admiral. As a matter of fact, he was the admiral that President Kennedy tapped to lead the fleet for the Cuban Missile Crisis for the blockade around Cuba. He later served as a vice chief of naval operations in the Navy, and so he has been quite a distinguished career. Everything from World War II, the Korean War, and in fact he was the vice chief of naval operations during the Vietnam War as well. So he's well deserving. He is from Puerto Rico, so he should certainly be considered for that base.
Well, it's an interesting mix of gentlemen, all with very distinguished records, which is why the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance is putting these names forward. And they're really making recommendations to people that, since the Department of Defense has a naming commission, you can actually reach out to that commission and say, hey, we support this name or that name, and HVLA would like you to support these three names. And that website for the naming commission is www.thenamingcommission.gov. I'm just hoping Department of Defense didn't pay a whole lot of money to figure that name out. thenamingcommission.gov. As you have been talking about base renaming and thinking about Hispanic military men who should be honored here with base naming, what kind of reaction have you gentlemen received from your colleagues, DOD, active duty folks, on this idea that if you're going to have this opportunity to rename, do it in some of them in the name of Hispanic veterans?
Yeah, I have seen very positive comments on this. I do know one of the members on the base renaming committee is a former commandant of the Marine Corps, and although that was General Neller, and although he has not said he prefers any specific name, he has indicated that he felt that the bases should be named to reflect our society. So I think another member on the committee is also the first four-star general or admiral Michelle Howard. So I think with the diversity of the naming commission, I believe there will certainly be, they're going to cast a wide net and consider everyone. But I would expect that their solutions will have some reflection. It will be a closer reflection to our current society than the old bases.
Well, we want to recommend folks go to the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance website, which is hvlavets.org, for some more information on this and certainly on the backgrounds on these two generals who we're talking to. Pretty interesting discussion with General Martinez and General Medina. I hope you'll go to hvla.org and kind of check more of that story out, and maybe even go to the namingcommission.gov, and weigh in on what you think ought to happen with those bases where they're going to rename them. That decision's been made. Now that that's been made, let's talk about how these bases should be named on a going forward basis. So kind of a whole new issue, and an interesting discussion with members of HVLA. The discussion with Captain Paul Ryan of the United States Navy Reserve, retired on the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, was also a good bit of history where we learned about, Michiganders, maybe who we forgot their military service, and you can check more of that out at MIMilitaryVetHallOfHonor.org. So those are both good things to look into out of today's show. As I said earlier, I'm Jim Fossone. I've been your officer of the deck today. It's a pleasure to always be in that role when give Dale a little crew chief time off from his duties here at the microphone for Veterans Radio. And we want to remind you always that you can find us on Facebook. Like us if you haven't. It'll keep you posted on the shows. Our website is veteransradio.net. And so we're always looking for new ideas, people to talk to, maybe stories that you heard that haven't been fully explored on the air. So if you got one of those hanging around, or if you know a buddy who maybe has one of those hanging around, throw us an email. It's jim@veteransradio.net, or my sidekick, dale@veteransradio.net. We're always looking for those additional ideas. I want to, before we get out of here, also talk to you about our sponsors. We've got some great sponsors, and they've been loyal for, we're sneaking up on 18 years of doing Veterans Radio. Our local VSO sponsors, the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles, Chapter 310 in Ann Arbor, VFW Graf O'Hara, Post 423, and American Legion Press Corps, Post 46, both in Ann Arbor. We couldn't do this show without our sponsors, and if you want to be a sponsor, go to veteransradio.net. Contact us to help us out in that regards. It's really something that keeps us going, and also helps relieve the stress level when we can cover all the expenses. Nobody's drawn a salary out of this. We're doing this for our love of our veterans and the need to tell these stories so that they don't get lost. We talk about historical issues. Maybe that's the Hall of Honor discussion today. But we also talk about things that are current that need to be dealt with today, base renaming, current issues of disparity of treatment in the armed forces. So come back next week. And until next time, you are dismissed.